Turn with me to Exodus. We're sitting at the kitchen table a few nights ago, and my son was quoting something from a movie. I don't remember what it was. I don't even remember the quote, but I just know in the quote was God, but not as a reference to God. And he said it, and my 11-year-old daughter looked at him and said, "Will, you should not say that. That's taking the Lord's name in vain." And Will says, "I'm sorry, Judge Judy." One, I'm thinking, how does he know who Judge Judy is? I mean, how does he know that? But let me ask you, why did the Lord tell us those things? Well, why are those things important? And I have kind of grappled with the message all day today, and especially just thinking about why we are so slow to do what God asks us to do. How many of you just want God to do powerful things in your life? If your hand's not up, you probably didn't hear the question, right? I mean, we want God to do powerful things. And here's the thing. I think most of us see those powerful things as one of two things, neither of which they are. I don't think I can repeat that, but did you get it? Okay. One, I think that we think we earn those powerful things, right? Like it's just in exchange. When we do good things, God will do some powerful things. Or two, I think that we think of those powerful things as things that God does in other people's lives, but he wouldn't do in ours. I mean, God has already said he wants to do powerful things in our lives. And some of us, we already like have ideas of, God, here'd be a really neat, powerful thing you could do in my life, right? And sometimes God works that way, and sometimes he doesn't. But it is not to be a riddle or a mystery. God just calls us to trust him and to follow him. And I want to share with you out of Exodus chapter 32. It's a story probably a lot of you are at least somewhat familiar with. And I've just, you know, just today I've just read through and read through and read through this chapter, because there's always been questions I've had, you know, about things that take place in this chapter. But before we dive into it, I'm going to give just a brief history. And I gave this history a few weeks ago, but the Israelites had been in captivity for, like 400 years. And they knew that God was going to deliver them. He promised that. And indeed, he comes through. He does that. He does these amazing things. Not only are they freed from the bondage, the captivity that they had been in, but also, I mean, God parts the Red Sea. I mean, how cool is that? God didn't have to do it. He could have levitated them. That would have been cool, wouldn't it? I mean, think about this. But he parts the Red Sea. And I have to think, because a great question is, why did God part the Red Sea? Why did he deliver them that way? And like for me, it's just like how incredible God is. You know, God knows he's going to deliver them. But then it's like, hey, as God says to the heavenly host, watch this. Isn't that cool? And God does that. And then God begins to establish a kingdom through the Israelites. And what you find in, 15, 16 chapters of Exodus leading up to what we're going to cover tonight is just God telling him, here's how I want you to do this. Here's how I want you to do this. Very specific instructions about how this kingdom is to be set up. So, Exodus 32. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him." Now think about this. How long were they in captivity? Well, a little longer than that. 400 years they're in captivity. I mean, let's talk about time, right? 400 years. Moses is on the mountain, and scholars speculate how long he was there, a week, a few days. It was longer than 10 minutes, let's put it that way. But it's not a significant amount of time. Compared to 400 years, Moses wasn't gone any time at all. He was on the mountain. But the people, they begin to panic a little bit. What's God doing? What's going to happen? And there's a fear that kind of strikes them. And they said, you know, we don't even know. Moses may be dead for all that we know. And their great question is, if Moses is dead, how are we going to hear from God? And there's something significant, at least I think it's really significant. Listen to what they say. And as for this fellow Moses, who, is anybody reading this? Who brought us up out of Egypt. Did you catch that? I don't think I've ever caught it in my life. But did you hear that? As for this fellow Moses, who brought us up out of Egypt. Right there, you should know this is not going in a good direction. Because who brought them up out of Egypt? Who brought them up out of Egypt? God did. Moses was certainly an instrument that God used. And Moses was obedient. He was faithful. But he's not the one that brought him up out of Egypt. God did. But immediately, what they are recognizing is, oh, it was Moses who brought us up out of Egypt. What are we going to do without Moses? And so quickly, I mean, after being delivered from the hand of the Egyptians, after the Red Sea being parted, after them seeing just unbelievable things from the hand of God, so quickly, they turned from that. And as for this fellow Moses, who brought us up out of Egypt. You know, tonight, I want you to be in prayer tonight. Some of you may know, some of you may not, but tonight, Pastor Andrew Eaton, our senior high pastor, who's done an amazing job, tonight is his last night with us. And he's going to be moving on. God's taken him in another direction. And so tonight, you know, our youth, now they've known for a couple of weeks that he was leaving, but tonight's his last night. And you know what my prayer is for those kids? Because God's done amazing things, hasn't he, Shane? I mean, he's done amazing things, you know, and God used Andrew in a really powerful way. But you know what my prayer is? That these kids don't think that it was Andrew. That all the things that happened in their lives, it was God. That God did it, right? Because if they believe that it was God that did it, what changes after tonight? Nothing. Nothing. Because it was God that did that work. It's God who's doing the present work. It's God who's going to continue to do the work that's going to be done. It was always God. And I don't want those kids to get confused. And I don't want them to think that maybe it was Andrew. Because what's the devil going to be telling them? That it was Andrew. And the Israelites think that it was Moses, right? I remember I got a call from a lady, and she was at a different church, and she called, and she was crying, she was upset, and she wanted to talk to me. And, you know, when I get on the phone, she said, Pastor Jamie, I just need to talk to you because I don't think I'm saved. And I was like, oh, well, this is exciting, right? Somebody's going to get saved. This is great. And I said, let me ask you this. Why is it that you don't believe you're saved? She said, because we just found out that the pastor at our church that led me to Christ had an affair. And so, how could I be saved? And that's what she was thinking. How could I be saved? Because this was, you know, and so it turned into this great conversation that, whoa, that pastor didn't save you. I mean, if any of you are here and you think that I saved you or Pastor Steve saved you, or you wouldn't think Pastor Keith did, but if you thought that some person saved you, let me tell you, only God can save people, right? Only God can do that. And our great trust is in God to save. But the Israelites get to this point and they said, as for that fellow Moses who led us out of Egypt, right there, Aaron should have said to the people, time out. Moses didn't bring you out of Egypt. It was God who brought you out of Egypt. And if Moses is laying dead on the top of that mountain, we're going to be okay because it was God who led us to this point. And it's God who's going to lead us to where he wants to take us. It was always God. Always. Never forget that. Never lose sight of that. And so we know just from their attitude right here already, they have not just forgotten what God had done for them, but already they're giving men credit for what only God could do. Now, how does that translate to us? How might we get confused that way? I've given you a few examples. Pray for our teenagers tonight, right? Because some of them are heartbroken. You know, and I remember being a youth pastor and leaving a church and, you know, and as that guy leaving, I had this thought in the back of my head. Oh, Jesus. What will become of all these kids? Because I won't be there. And God said, they'll probably be better off. Right? Because it's always God. The Israelites forget this. Aaron, I don't know what all is lacking in Aaron's life at this moment, but obviously something's lacking, you know, in Aaron's leadership. No question about it. And God puts people in our lives. He speaks to us through people. He leads us through people, but it's always God that's doing the work. Aaron answered them. Because imagine Aaron, right? And all the people said, Moses, there is an uprising taking place right here. The people are disturbed. They are unsettled. They're uncertain about what's going to happen to them. And Aaron can tell, oh my goodness, this is about to be chaos. Aaron himself was probably wondering, where is Moses? So Aaron says this, take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me. Now, just reading that, it could sound like maybe there's some wisdom here. Ooh, what's he getting ready to do? He's getting ready to tell them, you can't put your trust in gold. I mean, would that have been awesome, right? That'd been a great... That's not what he does. So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast into the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. And then they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. Now, let me ask you something. They've been in captivity. Listen, I just want to bring out some things that maybe we haven't thought about. And when I say that, what am I always admitting? These are things I hadn't thought about. These are things that I just really hadn't noticed. They have been in captivity for 400 years. I don't know if you've ever been in captivity for any amount of time. Probably most of us in here in that physical sense of captivity. We don't have a clue what that's like. But 400 years, what do you accumulate in 400 years if you're a slave? Nothing. Kids. That's it. Because the Egyptians were happy for them to have more children because that would mean more workers. But as far as accumulating wealth, that opportunity's not available in captivity, but they've got gold earrings. Now think about it. If I collected all the gold earrings here tonight, we might make a calf ear, right? I mean, think about this. They make a golden calf out of all the earrings. Now listen. Now this is, for me, this is significant. And I hope that it is to you. Where did they get that wealth? Where did they get those things? Anybody have an idea? It's just, listen, Egypt, right? We're talking the New York City of its day. Egypt. There was all kinds of wealth that was in Egypt. Not only does God free the Israelites from Egyptian captivity, God transfers the wealth of Egypt to the Israelites. They've got gold earrings, which obviously means that they had a lot of other stuff as well. So look how God took care of them. Y'all, you know, I love to quote out of, I think it's Song of Solomon, that God restores the years the locusts have eaten. Yeah, I say that all the time. So y'all know what I'm talking about when I say that. God restores the years the locusts have eaten. They accumulated more wealth in that transfer of wealth than they would have had in 400 years. Look how God took care of them. And God intended to bless them that way. Now, please, now listen to me, church. Please do not take what I'm saying is, and that's always the way God blesses, is through wealth. Because if that is true, what does that say for where some of us are at? That God's blessed us in a lot of ways. And listen, we live in America, so all of us have been blessed with wealth to an extent because we live in this country. If you got change in your pocket, you're one of the richest people in the world if we line up from the poorest to the richest. But this way that God cares for them and what God gives them to begin to establish this kingdom, it's amazing. But let me tell you, because they want to sacrifice, or because they want to worship an idol, they have to sacrifice the things that God gave them to do it. Did you hear that? Yes. To sacrifice the idol, it cost them the things that God gave them. They had to give those things up. And God didn't give those things for them to give them up. God gave them those things to bless them because he wanted them to have them. They decide they're going to worship an idol. And so they take the things that God gave them and they sacrifice them to worship an idol. How many of us have done that? Taking the things that God has given us to worship an idol. Because I'm going to tell you, it is costly, costly to worship anything other than God. It is costly. And listen, and that's not God's price tag, that this is what happens. This is the choice we make, what we have to do to give up the things that God has given us to worship an idol. And this is what's happening here. This is what the people are doing. And the Bible goes into great detail here. And I say for some reason, but we're going to know why here shortly. The Bible goes into great detail to talk about how they meld the gold all together and they take a tool and they fashion a calf out of it, right? There's like big time detail there about how this happens. And in case you're wondering why, because Moses is on the mountain. He's with God. The Bible tells us that God wrote on these tablets, on the front and on the back, and he gives them to Moses on top of the mountain. And he tells Moses, you need to get down there because there is utter chaos in the Israelite camp. You need to hurry up and get down there. And God tells Moses, and while you're on your way down there, I want you to know, I am so tired of this stiff-necked people. And God says to Moses, and I am going to wipe them out. It's as if God says, I'll find me another people who won't forget what I've done, who won't be willing to give up the things that I have given them to worship something else. And God says to Moses, I am done with these people. Moses approaches the camp and he saw the calf and the dancing and his anger burned. And he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf they had made and burned it in the fire. Then he ground it into powder, scattered it on the water, and made the Israelites drink it. It sounds like my dad. Moses is furious. He says to Aaron, what did these people do to you that you led them into such great sin? Do not be angry, my Lord, Aaron answers. You know how prone these people are to evil. They said to me, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him. So I told them, whoever has any gold jewelry, take it off. Then they gave me the gold. I threw it in the fire and out came a calf. And it makes me feel like Aaron. Anybody ever just lie so that you don't get in all the trouble that you could have gotten into? I mean, I can tell you the times my mom or my dad would say, "What happened?" And I would look at him and say, "You are not even going to believe this." It was unbelievable. It was just, think about, Aaron says, yeah, the people, they brought their gold, they threw it in there, and his calf comes out. It was unreal. If you're God, what happens to Aaron in that moment? He's gone, right? And yet, if that's how God operated, who would still be here?
Nobody.
No, especially you. Now, here's the thing. Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control and so became a laughingstock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance to the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. For the sake of time, I just want to wrap up with this. Moses intercedes for the people. Moses begs God not to destroy them. And I want you to know that if you ever look up some of the really difficult passages of Scripture, like, you know, how could this be? This is always one of them. Because God says that he will destroy the people. Moses begs him not to. And it sounds as if God changes his mind. Now, this has huge theological implications for us tonight. Because I want to tell you, God doesn't change his mind. He doesn't. It doesn't happen. And yet, he tells Moses, "I'm through with these people. I'm going to destroy them." And then God doesn't do that. What happens here is this really powerful thing. And probably something that's happened in our lives, right? Because Moses speaks this word, God speaks this word to Moses. Because what is the ruling emotion of Moses during this whole episode? His ruling emotion is anger. He's angry. He's angry with the people. And yet, Moses just starts recounting everything that God had done. Not just from the captivity, but even before then. And the promise that God made to Abraham and how that would be carried through the patriarchs and how God delivered the Israelites over and over again. And Moses starts recounting all of this. Now, for me, as I read this, this is what God wanted all along. God wanted them to know that it was me that got you through this. It was me who delivered you. It was me who provided for you. It was me who has been there for you. That's what God wanted. That's what got all this started. Because the Israelites began to wonder if God had anything to do with it. I mean, they make a golden calf, and what do they say to the people about the calf? "These are the gods who brought us out of Egypt." And God says he's going to destroy them. And Moses just starts recounting everything that God did. Moses reminds God of the promises that he made. "God, how could you wipe this people out? You promised that this would be an enduring kingdom. God, you promised that the number of the Israelites would be greater than that of the sand on the seashore. You promised this." And Moses starts just recounting all these things. This is what God wanted. Listen, this is what we need to do. This needs to be our response to difficult times. This needs to be our response to disappointment. This is how we respond. And what we do know is that God does punish the Israelites, because the whole chapter ends that God sends a plague on the Israelites. He doesn't wipe them out, but he sends a plague. And I want to close just talking about that. Because of what happens at the end of the chapter, it makes me not even want to preach it. Because how do you deal with the discipline of God? I remember one time, one of my kids, I don't remember which one, but you know, we told him, you know, don't run, you know, don't go in the road, basically. You know, I mean, we all say that to our kids, right? Don't go to the road. And they were really little. This was probably, I probably haven't been at Hillview very long at all. And I remember, I think it was one of my daughters who, well, it could only have been one. The other one was 6 months old. So, yeah, now I know which one. And she kind of makes a beeline for the road, and you know, and I run and I grab her and I swat her little hiney, and you know, and it's a daughter, so I mean, you can beat a son, but yeah, he can't beat a daughter, right? A daughter, just usually a little tap, you know, and she just had the most horrified look on her face, and that little chin started quivering, right? Because she doesn't understand totally what has happened. And so in that little swat, there's a little bit of pain, right? Or there should be, all right? Or it's ineffective. Y'all are looking at me like, I don't know. Was there pain? There should be pain, people, okay? But here's the thing about it. Because obviously, it brought me no gratification to spank her, right? I received no enjoyment, no pleasure out of that. But it comes from a knowledge that I have about the whole situation is how the discipline comes about, because I tell her not to run to the road. And granted, I'll give it to her at 2 years old that she doesn't totally understand why she shouldn't run towards the road. I'll give her that. She doesn't understand that, okay? And she doesn't have to totally understand it if she will just listen. If she will just do what I said. And so because she didn't, I want her to know that I'm serious. I don't want you anywhere near that road. And so the little bit of pain that comes in the spanking, what do you and I know about that pain compared to the pain of a car going 40 miles an hour? What do we know? Somebody tell me. There's no comparison, right? And as her father, who loves her, if that little bit of pain can be the pain that prevents the pain of the other, oh, it's worth it, isn't it? And why would I do that?
You love her.
Listen, I don't spank the neighbor's kids.
You don't love her.
I know, I thought of 1,000 things I could say right there, but I don't want to lose the moment. That's it, I don't spank anybody else's kids. Oh, but I'll spank mine. Why?
Because
I love them, right? They are mine. I love them. And that little bit of pain, oh, it is worth it to keep them from the bigger pain. There's no question about it. And so God has told us these things. God has told us how He wants us to live. God has told us how He wants us to worship. God has told us how He wants us to know Him. He has told us that, right? And why has He told us that? Because it is absolute, not just that He loves us. Of course He loves us. But it's because this is going to be what's best for us. But some of those things we don't understand totally, right? Some of those things we just don't get. What's the big deal, God? Why? I mean, why like this? But God said it. And if we trust Him, His word is enough. And I would say that's not news or revelation to anybody that's here tonight. We've all wondered. We've all gotten in the road, right? And we've all gotten hit. We know the pain that's involved when we won't listen to God, when we won't follow Him. Because God says, I want you to live this way. This is who I want you to be. This is how I want you to relate to each other. How I want you to relate to the world. This is how I want you to relate to me. And God tells us these things. And it's when we begin to question. Because you know what our temptation is tonight? Our temptation isn't to give somebody else the credit or the glory for our lives. You know, the Israelites gave the credit to Moses. Moses, this fella who brought us up out of Egypt. That's not our temptation, I don't think. for most of us. Our temptation is to think that we brought ourselves out of Egypt. That we did it. And when we begin to think that, the natural thing that happens, I mean, the logical conclusion of thinking that we did it ourselves, is that we don't have to listen to God. That we'll figure it out. And so what we have at the end of Exodus 32 is God disciplines the Israelites. But he does it because the road they're on, they are going to be wiped out. They are going to be obliterated if they don't trust God. And not for God's preservation, but for theirs. God brings a discipline about to reinforce we need to listen to God. But I want you to understand that in the context of the story I told about my daughter. Because I think when you talk about God's discipline, well, you get like some of the looks I'm getting right now. You know, where people are like, that doesn't make sense. But you see, I love that little girl. I love her. And I love her so much that I'll bring her a little bit of pain if it keeps her from a pain that I can't control. A pain that ultimately could destroy her. Because I love her that much. Now, increasingly in our culture, this is a concept that's not understandable. Because increasingly in our culture, you should do what you want to do. And it shouldn't be anybody's business what you do. And discipline, we don't need... You see what I'm saying? Because there was a time in our culture when people really understood the discipline of God because children were disciplined. And it was easy to put it into that context that a good, loving parent disciplines their child. And it's not out of spite, and it shouldn't be out of anger. Amen? Because you're wrong, parents. If it's out of anger, you're wrong. But it's out of love. It's out of protection. And I hope you caught something that I said about my daughter, and then I'll be done. At two, she couldn't understand all the implications of running into the road. She couldn't. She's two, right? And I don't always understand the implications of what God tells me. I don't always understand it. And when the understanding isn't there, there's only one thing left, and that is trust. I don't understand, but I trust. I'm going to ask you to bow your head tonight. Close your eyes. Father, we just come to you. And this is an easy thing to say that we're going to trust you. But it's an incredibly difficult thing at times for us to do that. Lord, you call us to live in a way the rest of the world doesn't live. Lord, the way that you call us to live really kind of makes us look odd and stick out. Whether that be the love that you call us to show others, the forgiveness that you require us to give to others. Or Lord, our refusal to worship anything but you and you alone. And I pray, Father, because I think a lot of us tonight, our struggle, it may be in that area of worship. And as ridiculous as it is to think of the Israelites worshiping a golden calf, we're worshiping things just as ridiculous in our lives. And Lord, the issue of trust, I know that's an issue tonight, Lord. You've called us to do some things and we don't have total understanding about that. And when all that's left there is trust, some of us have found that there's not enough trust in us to do what you've called us to do. So Lord, I pray tonight you deepen our trust in you. Lord, I would pray for clarification tonight, and I do. I pray for clarification. Some of us are just dealing with things, and oh, we just want clarification, and I pray for that. But Lord, until then, teach us to trust you. And Lord, may we never think that we brought ourselves out of Egypt. But like Moses, may we recount all the ways that you've been there for us, all the ways that you have provided. May we always remember that you brought us out of Egypt. We love you, Jesus. Let's stand together, church. The altar's open. I want to invite you to come tonight. You come.